to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are jingling your bells in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, we didn't quite keep the wolves from the door last Sunday, but an entertaining 2-2 draw, which was, in Graham Potter's words, a fairish result, it saw us add another point to the total. We'll have to wait until Monday night for our next action as we head to the dark side to take on Snake Mountain FC. Palace have looked okay so far this season and will be keen to avenge us doing the double over them last season, but we have been on a decent run ourselves of late, and can we make it 2 wins on the road at Selhurst Park? Joining me today is not Alan Wears, who is out pulling Christmas crackers, so I have summed up media royalty. Some have called him a boffin, an egghead, and even a guru, but we just call him Kieran Maguire.
Hello, Adrian. I'm delighted to be here, as always.
And we have also welcomed the man who actually is a guru of sorts. It's Matt Potter. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, AD. Good to be here.
We finally got going. Just to give you the surroundings, we're in a hospital radio studio, which doesn't properly work. So it's all very cosy in here at the moment. But welcome back to the show, guys. It's lovely to have you in. What have you made of Potter Ball so far?
I've been very impressed, I think, along with the majority of people. Last year, I think, under Chris, I think for the first half of the season, results were slightly better than performances, and in the second half of the season, both results and performances were abysmal. What we've seen this season is results have been reasonable and performances slightly better.
Yeah, Matt?
Yeah, I'd go along with that. By the end of last season, I was waking up on Saturdays and going, oh God, I've got to go to football, which is never really a good thing. So it's been more entertaining. I don't know if we must have around the same amount of points. I don't think it's made a massive difference.
Points-wise, we're pretty much on
the key. But from an entertainment point of view and from a potential point of view, you can see what he's trying to do, and it's very enjoyable.
Yeah, Kieran, Potter himself has even said it's a work in progress. It's unfinished.
I think that's a fair assessment. If you look to see what Pep Guardiola did when he first came to the Etihad, it took him a full season to get to grips with the strengths and weaknesses of the team and the squad, and then make the adjustments in the second season. Clearly, we're operating on a far lower budget than that, but you get the impression that Graham Potter does have a vision. Tony's clearly backing him on that in terms of giving him the new contract. And as Matt was inferring, I really look forward to going watching the Albion, which last year you were doing it out of a sense of duty, which is a terrible thing to do because it's the Albion and we love it so much. But this year, just to give the example of going to the Emirates last week and thinking, well, we could do something here, and of course we did.
There is that, Matt. Is there that bravery? I mean, we're going to these top, so-called top six sides, and we're playing within our shells a little bit, and we just didn't believe we could actually get something. That seems to have gone this year.
Well, I mean, I always thought with Chris we'd go away to a top six side, and we'd hope to hold on for a point. And we were never ever good enough to do that. It was an utterly pointless exercise. And I always thought, I mean, I realise I'm not a football manager and blah 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 blah, but I always thought, if you just threw the kitchen sink at it, there's a chance you'd get one result in which you get 3 points out of your top six instead of none, which you get by trying to defend all the time. If you go there with some belief, you go there trying to play your game. I think a good example of that was Liverpool. You know, is if you go there trying to play your game, you've got a chance. Yeah. If you go there just saying, inviting them on and saying, we're going to try and survive for 90 minutes here, you've got no chance against top semester.
Yeah, but Kieran, even when we went to Man City, okay, we lost 4-0 in that game, but we could have got at least a couple of goals in that game and actually made it a little bit more difficult for them.
Yeah, we were quite entertaining. Pep said similar. And also, I think in that match, I'm speaking here for half of Merseyside, as you know, that's where I work. In that match, we managed to win the Premier League for Liverpool by Laporte doing his leg in when he was trying to stop a rampaging run by Adam Webster, and launched into a rather injudicious tackle.
Well, it was, yes. Laporte is a big miss for him, for sure. And I mean, do you think Man City are actually concentrating on the Champions League this year now, then?
I don't know. It's all they've got left, isn't it, really? So
they've
they
got
are
the
now.
Cup,
is the
whatever it's called this week.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're probably not going to get too excited about that, are they? I mean, I think they are. And you have to say for Guardiola, that's got to be the one, hasn't it? Anyway, you know, he's going to be something of a failure.
Well, with Guardiola, it does tend to go in 3-year cycles, so it's he's probably just coming to the end of that.
He's been there 4 years now.
This is his third
now.
So okay. I think the players get tired of because he pushes them really, really hard. But that's hard, doesn't he?
I mean, maybe the length of his. He can sustain that for. Yeah.
Well, that's for another show. Let's talk about the game last Sunday then, which was Wolves. It was a really entertaining game.
Yes, it was, and it's one of those funny games where you come away from it feeling slightly disappointed that we only got a point. Mm. Yet Wolves were a very impressive team. They play a very fast, tacking brand of football. And had it not been for sloppiness on our behalf, I think we might have held on. But if truth be told, I think a draw was a fair result. Mm. And we can't have any complaints. I think we've also got to be realistic. Where is our benchmark this season? Is it to finish in the top 10, as Tony's intimating, make the start of that journey, or should we just be happy with playing some entertaining football and avoiding relegation?
Matthew?
Well, I guess the answer to that one for me is playing some entertaining football and avoiding relegation, and then, you know, and then building from there to looking at a top 10 finish. But I thought the Wolves game, I mean, Wolves, when I first saw them set up, they were set up sort of two ranks of five, really. And I thought, they've come here to park the bus, you know, because I haven't really watched Wolves very much this season. And then suddenly they just explode from that base and you realise, oh, this is a really well-organised, well-disciplined, very fast on the break team who aren't going to give you anything at the back if they can avoid it and are going to hit you. So, I guess a draw was a fair result. It was a good result for me.
Okay, well, let's go right back to the beginning of this one, and it's something that has been reported in the press this week as well. Obviously, it was the Rainbow Laces weekend, and it was a magnificent display, particularly in the East End, holding up their placards to show up the rainbow flag there. But two Wolves fans were arrested for homophobic stuff, and we'd seen this up and down the country where there has been incidents with fans for the same reason. It's 2019. Surely we've got to move on from that.
I would have said you'd hope so, but then given yesterday's election result, we're probably in for more of it.
Keeping it neutral today, Matthew. I
don't know. I mean, I go to pretty much every away game, and I've noticed a drop in it, certainly in the sort of sung stuff towards us. In the last couple of years, there are always at every single game you go to, the gestures and from some of the fans some of the idiot fans who are close to you. It's a shame, it's a tragedy really. But it goes on all the time. Maybe I think it's better that the fact that they actually nick them.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I was watching the game with the last week with the was it the City fan. Yeah, with the City fan doing the monkey thing and with two stewards just standing there watching him. You know,
but he was subsequently ejected. He was subsequently arrested and facing legal proceedings.
He is, so. But the fact that they're just standing there and sort of watching it and not even really even acknowledging it was going on.
Yeah.
So it's good that they're arresting them for it, and you know, hopefully that'll have some effect in the long run.
In terms with on the playing side there, Kieran, I mean, obviously, Justin Fashion, you were still the last player to actually openly come out whilst he was still playing. Obviously, Thomas Hitzelberger and a few others have since then. But it's do you think that the timing is right now, or are they just going to stay hidden?
I think it will stay hidden because the nature of football fandom, but also the nature of the dressing room itself, is a very difficult environment in which to come out. there are gay players, and quite often their colleagues will know about the degrees of their sexuality. But then a bunker mentality comes over, and we will protect him because he's our mate. Ultimately, it's none of my business, and it's none of anybody else's business.
Exactly. Should we even care? That is the issue, isn't it? I mean, basically, no one's going to talk about it or the other players. It's their own, what they do. It's their own sexuality. It's, you know, it's whether they're straight, gay, transgender, whatever.
Should care.
Well, that's not what I'm saying.
We should. If you've got an environment where people don't feel comfortable in coming out, which clearly is true in football, there's something wrong going on there. Really, you know, we shouldn't have an environment where people are not, where people are afraid to come out.
No, that's true. That's what I'm saying. That's kind of what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is it doesn't matter to in all other walks of life. It doesn't matter what your sexuality is. You can come out and no one's going to like think any differently. It just seems like this harsh environment that is, like you said, the dressing room mentality does make it difficult. But in other sports, it doesn't seem to be a problem.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, how many openly gay cricketers are there?
There have been.
Well, Stephen Davis was one.
Yeah, but it's not proportionally. It's not many, is it?
No.
Gay rugby players, you know, gay snooker players. There's not. Sport seems to be an area where, you know, people seem to have difficulty in coming out.
Okay.
But, I mean, I guess that's true in society anyway.
Okay. Well, let's move on then and actually talk about the game. There was one change with Leandro Trossard coming in for the dead-legged Aaron Connolly, and Ali J got a place on the bench, which pleased a few people. There was an early chance with Trossard crossing for Alzati. Now, Stephen Alzati has come into the team. He's impressed. He's played in five different positions. Finishing isn't his forte, it would seem.
No, I think he's very cultured on the ball. He's incredibly confident. I mean, I saw him make his debut in the Premier League, and I was incredibly impressed that he is comfortable on the ball. He's willing to take players on. He's also willing to take risks in terms of the way he distributes the ball. Of the five positions that he has played, striker isn't one of them, and I think we know why.
Yeah. And Matt, he's... I mean, earmark possibly. Dale Stevens got booked late on in this game, which we'll talk about shortly. But do you think he could fit into that central midfield role that is vacated by Stevens on Monday?
Well, I don't know. Possibly. You're right. He looks really comfortable on the ball, doesn't he? Nothing seems to faze him. I like him. The slight worry I have with him is that because he can play in five positions, he's going to get moved around all the time. And I think he's better than that. I mean, I think we need to find his position.
Well, apparently that is central midfield.
Well, then let's plonk him in central midfield and give him some run of games there and see what he can do there. I'm not sure if he'll be able to do the Stevens role, but I'm not sure we've got anyone who can do the Stevens role. So we're going to have to play something different rather than try and, you know, just plug that gap and play the same way, I feel. I think if we try and do that, we'll get into trouble.
Well, of course, Dale Stevens is one of our midfielders, which we're going to be talking about when we come up with our midfield of the decade very shortly. Will he get in? That's a question. Will he get into your team? Who knows? Okay, well, there was an early chance for Trossard crossing for Alzati. This went to a corner. Grace's subsequent corner headed over by Dunk. Corner routines are actually... It's actually worth having a corner at the moment, do you think?
Yes, we certainly appear to be competitive. And that intuitively would seem wrong, because with Shane Duffy not starting this season, you know, Shane did get a few goals last year, but we seem to have a few new routines. Our short corner disturbs me very much, because the short corner does seem to be a ball which eventually ends up in the hands of Matt Ryan through a series of misplaced passes. The variety is there. Clearly, they have worked in a lot of these in practice, and we do look now that like we can contribute.
Okay, well, now you mentioned Shane Duffy there. Are you surprised that Shane hasn't been starting particularly? Let's talk about Adam Webster actually, because he has got two goals from set pieces this year, but he is a concern for me. Matthew, what do you think?
He is for me as well, actually. I mean, I can see why he's playing instead of Shane Duffy. I like Shane. Shane's a good, honest footballer, but you get what you get with Shane. He's not got a great deal of footballing skill to his name. You know, he's a great defender, but he's not really going to fit into this system. So I can see why he plays Webster. But Webster worries me as well. He does look to me like the sort of the weak link in that in that defence, or the vulnerable link in that defence.
When you look at a lot of the goals that we've conceded, it seems to be he's the defender that's getting beaten for that.
It does, and also when I look at it, I quite often see that he's affecting Dunk as well. You know, that Dunk is sort of pulling himself out of position slightly to cover for him at times, he's moved up a league, hasn't he? He's finding his way. He may well do it. If not, Ben White seems to be having a fantastic time at Leeds.
Kieran?
You've got options.
Well, my wife's son, he's a Leeds United season ticket holder.
Oh, good.
And the view there is that Ben White is the best central defender they've seen since Rio Ferdinand. And they are desperate for us to sell him in the January window or at the end of the season. I'm sure that our loan manager will have been observing and been reading the reports as well. The Albion would be very foolish to let him go to
David Weir.
Yes, absolutely. I've taught David.
Have you?
Yes.
You've taught lots of people.
I've taught lots of people, that's right. None of whom have been any better for the experience as well. I think Ben White clearly is somebody who the Albion want to develop on a long-term basis. And having had the experience of now three loan spells going up a division each time, I think he'll be ready for the Premier League next season, ideally in an Albion shirt.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, lots of people are talking about him and talking about big money moves for him. They're talking about over 20. Well, Liverpool were talking 20. But we're talking, obviously, we want a lot more than that if we were to sell him. But I mean, talking about Adam Webster again, obviously, who we did pay a lot of money for, £24 million, for, I believe. Our good friend Andy Bass, he describes him. You mentioned Rio Ferdinand there. He says he's very similar to him, where he'll be absolutely brilliant for 85 minutes and then he'll have 5 minutes where it could cost you the game.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. But that may be just coming up a league and then maintaining your concentration for that length of time. It's quite difficult.
I mean, also,
he's going, well, I don't know about brilliant, but he's got something going forward, definitely, yeah. But of course, we've also got Big Dan Byrne, who's been, you know, filling in
as left
heroically
back, yeah.
as a left back. We haven't, you know, he hasn't been given an opportunity in the middle, and he goes forward well, you know, without question. So we've got options there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Wolves were very good in this game, as we've already discussed, and they did. We started very quickly, but they did grow into the game, and they had a couple of chances. There's an absolute exocet of a shot from Neves, which just narrowly missed the top corner there. And then there was a weird kind of corner routine, which was similar to the Southgate's bus stop thing. But basically, it ended up with Matty Ryan coming to our rescue again. And he's been absolutely magnificent this season, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been having a good season this season. I think that he wasn't at last season when he came back from the whatever other side of the World Cup he was playing in last season. He didn't really seem to get back into it. But this season, he's been fantastic. He's been everywhere.
And it was a size header. It was Webster beating in the air for that one. But Jota plays a 1-2 with Jimenez, and he's given the freedom of the Albion defence to make it 1-0.
I think we were sliced open ridiculously easy there. It was fast into play, but the gap opened, and you could see Dale Stevens sort of trailing behind, sort of hands up in an exasperation.
Well, no one tracked it. It was watching it from where we were in the West Upper. You could actually see it easily, but I mean, obviously at a pitch level it's slightly more difficult. But
you would think that given that the players have drills 5 days a week prior to a match, they will have done their analytics. They know the way that Jota plays, that he will be playing off another striker or he will be looking for 1-2s. Yeah. That would be the way to stop him. Now, I appreciate he scored a hat-trick last night, so yeah, he's in form player, but it did seem that we went to sleep. And that has been a feature of us under Graham, in that, in general, I think the defending has been very solid. I think Lewis Dunk has been magnificent this season. But we go to sleep and we're conceding sloppy goals. I mean, certainly that was the case to Anfield, and that first goal was, and the second one, it was even worse.
Well, Wolves very nearly made it 2-0 shortly after that with, it was Route 1 stuff from them, actually, with Jimenez heading it onto Jutta, who was 1-1 with Ryan, with the Aussie keeping it at 1-0. And then we went Route 1.
And we certainly did.
Now, what kind of description would you like to put on to Dale Stevens' ball there? Because I was absolutely purring.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, wasn't it? It was absolutely perfect ball. And it,
as is it a pinger? Is that
ping, he pinged it. Yes, he did. He definitely pinged it. It was glorious, wasn't it? If you like Route 1 football, it doesn't get any better than that. Which, in that case, I do like Route 1 football.
I thought it was more measured than that.
Did you?
It was a long pass.
Well, it was. It was a long pass, yeah. Right. It wasn't just
30,
a hoof
40
up
yards?
Field, oh, yeah. Good.
But Morpay took it first time as well.
Yeah, which surprised everyone, I think. I mean, I think
especially
that was,
their goalkeeper.
Especially
Patricio,
their goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah.
It was great finish. Great finish, Brian.
And then a minute later, we went 2-1 up. And did you see the look on the face of Davy Prepper when he scored? I think even he was surprised.
I think he was. When was the last time Davy Prepper scored with a header?
He's come close a few times, actually. I remember one of the first chances he ever had for us, which was an absolutely bullet of a diving header. I can't remember who it was against. It was at the north end of the ground in his first season. And from there, it was like some sort of like Indian sign over him that he will never, ever score. And then I think he scored it against Leicester last season, didn't he? Yeah. But it was a beautiful ball from Trossard. I'm going to go a dinked ball
on this
one.
It was a dinked ball from Trossard. That was what Trossard does really well, isn't it? I mean, Trossard really does that superbly.
Yeah. Kieran, what have you made of Leandro so far this season?
Well, I think, I suspect, along with everybody else, when he first made those cameo performances coming off the bench, I thought we got the bargain of the season. There was a quick adjustment to my fantasy football team on the basis of that. And then he has made a difference when he's come on. When he's started, I don't know whether it's the thought of I've got to last 90 minutes and therefore I'm going to reduce my attacking intent. But he does seem slightly cautious in his play when he's starting the game. But having said that, the cross for Davies' goal was excellent. And he is a player that excites you. And that goes back to what we've been talking about, yeah, effectively from the start of this broadcast, in that it is now. You go to the Albion and it's something to look forward to. And I'm a numbers nerd, and our
really?
our XG this season compared to last season, I think that this is one of these things which I know it's a nerdy stat, but it is indicative of the amount of excitement that you're seeing as a fan, and that is considerably up. And it's one of those stats that in an individual match is fairly worthless, but over the course of the season, it is probably a fair barometer of the amount of chances that you're creating. And that was evident last season when our XG was appalling in the first half and we were getting the results, and then it came back to bite us on the bum.
Hmm. But the other thing was with Davy Prepper as well. The goal had been coming through. He'd been getting closer and closer and closer to it. And now, and anyone who listened to the show last week, and you would have heard me. This is me blowing my own trumpet here, and say he's getting closer and closer. I think he's going to score against Wolves. Go large on it, and he did. Did I go large on it? No, I didn't. But if you did, hopefully I made your weekend. You can thank me later. It's a pint. But then shortly after that, Wolves did equalise again. And it was, again, it's too easy.
Well, I guess. And again, I mean, Davy Prepper still thinking about his goal. Right? But I think, you know, he was sort of pretty much entirely to blame for that. It was fairly disastrous, wasn't it? Again, Kieran saying people switching off. It's like, yeah, completely and utterly switched off. But I'd like to go just back to what Kieran was saying. It's not only, you know, not only are we playing more exciting football, but we've actually got some more exciting players.
But it's still largely the same personnel as last year, though, isn't it?
I suppose it is, but you're seeing more. I mean, Connolly has been new this season. Trossard, Moy, Alzate, you know.
Webster.
Dan Burn.
But so what have the Romans really ever done for us?
So, and all of those in their own ways, are quite exciting.
But it's, well, I mean, and I mean, we've talked about Adam Webster there, but I mean, I think the with Potter, he does like them to take risk at the back, because if there's no risk, there's no gain.
He does, and there are times when I mean, I think there are 30,000 people screaming, "Who fit?"
There has been some very choice Anglo-Saxon being used.
There has.
Say.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you wonder what threat they're under that prevents them from hoofing it. Because there must come a point in some of those dodgy passing sessions that they have at the back where every fibre of their body is screaming, "Why don't I just hoof this?" And yet they don't.
Well, my advice would be to Graham Potter and all of our defenders, just because you now can take a short goal kick doesn't mean you have to. Just, you know, at least I liked it going out of the box. It was further away from our goal and less chance of them scoring. But I should mention as well that you mentioned Aaron Moy there. He did have a chance to make it 3-1 before they equalised. And Aaron Moy, it's a bit of a slow burner so far, really. But he's starting to come into his own, actually becoming more and more important with each game he plays.
I think he's been man of the match the last two matches. Yeah. He was magnificent at Arsenal and against Wolves. He was our best player. I think he's actually adapted to the system and he's thriving on that. And what I think has also happened is that the rest of the starting 11, they realise that he offers something different. Mm. He's very talented on the ball. I mean, if he had pace, he'd be worth £100 million. He'd be the new Eden Hazard in many respects.
Absolutely. I'm not 100% certain on this, but I believe that there is a clause in his loan deal where a transfer fee's already been agreed. So if it works for us, it works for both parties, I believe. Ali J got on the pitch.
He did. And I thought showed us exactly what he can do.
Yeah, I agree. Now, this is an opinion that I know isn't shared by a lot of people, but I think there's an awful lot to come from him still. And the interviews he's done with Brian Owen this week, where he's basically said, yeah, it has taken me a while to settle. It's a new country, new language, new food, new lifestyle, new teammates. You know, if you move into a different country, sometimes it does take a bit longer to settle. And getting the opportunity this season, obviously with a different manager as well, it's not necessarily easy for him. But I mean, one thing that we have been lacking, everything's been very, very narrow. There's been no width in our play. And maybe that's something that he can actually do.
I'll accept that moving to a new country and a new language and a new this, that, and the other can affect you in all sorts of ways. But does it really slow you down that much and stop you beating anyone?
Well, no, lack of pace does that. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, when I said he showed us exactly what he can do, what I meant was not very much.
Really? Kieran?
I think there's more to come potentially, but I will be very surprised if we see it. The article was written by Andy Naylor in one of the papers, indicate that the Albion are trying to put him out on loan in January. And to a certain extent, I think that's best for both sides. He's not even been getting into the squad on the majority of matches this season, which I'm sure is disappointing for him. It's disappointing for his fan club, and it's disappointing for the club because they've invested a huge sum of money on him. If he can recoup a bit of form and confidence, then I think the thing with Graham Potter, everybody comes back with a clean slate every summer.
I agree with that with Potter. Potter will give him a chance. But, I mean, for me, his problem is that last year, I will write off for him. He was played out of position and asked to do things that he
square pegs, round holes.
Square pegs, round holes. If you look at the sort of heat map of when he was playing in the Eredivisie, everything was in the last third on the wing. I mean, everything. Here, he simply doesn't have the pace, unless he's kept it really, really well hidden. He simply doesn't have the pace to take on Premier League fullbacks. He just hasn't got it. He's not going to get past any of them.
But you could say that about Pascal Gross as well, but he manages to get past them somehow.
Well, Pascal Gross has got some skills in his locker that I suspect Hamash hasn't got. Well, I know they haven't got because I haven't seen them. So he's not going to be able to do what he did before he came here. He's just not going to be able to do that in the Premier League. So he's got to be able to do something else. And I haven't seen what that something else may be. But what he's not going to do is scoot past fullbacks with pace. He's just not going to be able to do that.
Okay, Kieran, last word on Ali.
I tend to agree with what Matt's just said. He's not a pacey winger, but I don't think Potter ball involves pacey wingers. I think it does involve people that can pass the ball through the eye of the needle, and that's a skill which we at best we can say we need to defer judgment on.
Well, I'm still hoping for the best. I'm a glasses half full person with Ali and a lot, and hopefully he can prove some people wrong. There's some people in my office that really, really, really hate him, and I want them. I'm hoping they're going to eat their words because I'm sticking up for him. But then I will stick up for any player that pulls on the Brighton shirt, Frank. Even Liam Best. No, actually, no, let's not push it. Actually, we're going to talk about at least some of the midfielders, some of those on that list. Jesus Christ. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ali Packham. I'm here with Matt Potter and Kieran Maguire. And we are, of course, brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And I'm just going to pass this shirt over to the gentleman in the studio here. If you could just have a look at that and describe this beauty for me. It's really nice. I like it.
Well, it's made by Admiral. My colour blindness and the fact that we've got dim lights isn't helping here. It's sort of blue and white stripes, which then fade and speckle at both the top and the bottom. Is it an Indian shirt? Is it an Indian club?
No, it is not.
Oh, well, I don't got no idea why I said that, by the way. it looks okay. And if the Albion ever are thinking of going anything down this particular route, can I quickly advise them not to do so?
And can you see any sponsors or anything on there?
Yeah, it says Avis Spa, who are the well-known spa makers of
Abbey.
Okay, no, you know when you're on this one, but I mean,
it's a real Tesco's bag, isn't it?
It is a little bit. Now, if I can get through this without getting into trouble, I've done really well. So, yeah, bear with me. So, here is your shirt of the week, and this is the 1995 home shirt of Japanese J2 league side Avispa Fukuoka. Are you ready for this? The club was founded as Chao Bohan SC in 1982. They changed their name in 1993 to Fujieda Blues, and they were based in Fujieda, which is in the prefecture of Shizuoka, and before moving to Fukuoka in 1994. As Fukuoka Blues, they became champions of the Japanese. Be quiet, Matthew. I knew I was going to corpse on this. They became It's a good shirt. I'm gonna get to the end of this one. I'm just not going to look at you, Matt. See, Kieran's keeping the stroke. Do you want to read it, Kieran?
Oh, no, I can't read it.
Oh, okay. Okay, they became champions of the Japanese Football League in 1995, and they were admitted to the J League when it formed in 1996. The team is now based in Hakata, which is in Fukuoka, on the north side of Kyushu, and they changed their name to Avispa Fukuoka in 1996. Avispa means wasp in Spanish, says Phil. Their nickname in Japanese is Hachi, which means hornet. It's just getting more and more confusing. Home is the 22,560-feet capacity Level 5 Hakanomi Football Stadium, which was built in 1995. And former players include South Korean goalie Lee Bum Young, who played for the Wasp in the 2016 season, and winger Joel Griffiths, who played twice for Leeds in 2006 before making his move east to play for several sides in Japan and Australia. Current players include Brazilian striker Luiz Eduardo dos Santos Gonzaga, who's known as Dudu. And he has been with the side for 12 months, racking up 35 appearances and 10 goals. Kennedy Egbus Mikuni. He's making this up. He's a defender.
I think he's using a random word generator there.
I'm not even going to go through that other bit, Phil. Anyway, thanks for that, Phil. That's wonderful. And that leads us on to the competition, which is kind of linked to this shirt, actually. So we have been, as you know, we have had a competition running in association with The Art of Football, who produce a lot of wonderful, wonderful artwork and T-shirts. Go onto their website, have a look at their stuff. It's absolutely wonderful. And they've produced a print of an Albion classic shirt. You've probably seen this online. And it's been great. We were involved in changing it because for some reason they included a training shirt rather than an Albion classic shirt on it, which no one could quite understand. So we changed it to a shirt. And last week we asked you the question, which was related to that shirt, which, who was the shirt manufacturer of the 1996 to 97 home shirt as worn in the last game at the Goldstone and at Hereford? Do you know the answer to that one, guys?
Was it Admiral?
It was Admiral. And we've had lots of response to this one, and we're just going to do the draw for that one now. So we've got two of these to give away. So if you can just pull one of those out each.
Kieran Maguire.
Oh, no.
Tom Jackson.
Tom Jackson, congratulations. We will be in contact with you to see whether you want a T-shirt or a print.
And the second winner is Paul Alford.
And congratulations to you, Paul. You again, we will contact you and to see which version you want. So it's, and again, thanks a lot to Arts of Football. We've done a couple of things with them in the past, and long may that continue. Their stuff is great. Are you familiar with their work?
I've seen one or two of them. Yeah, very impressive.
Their stuff, which they do, particularly they do a lot of like a 90s icon things as well, and some of their they've got a print of the Amex at night. I'm hoping that someone somewhere has got a really lovely picture of the Goldstone at night, which they want to reproduce as well. They've got some of these iconic grounds, which you've like old ones like Ayresome Park and the old Den have been recreated in this. It's beautiful. So anyway, go to the Art of Football, have a look at their stuff, and we'll hopefully have another competition with them later on in the season. Okay, so we have been doing our team of the decade, and so far we've got Matt Ryan in goal. We've got a defence of Bruno, Dunk, Duffy and Bridge. Is that, would you agree with that as the best defence of the decade?
I might have Matthew Upson. I thought he was magnificent for that one season.
Yeah, I did as well.
He was discussed. But we decided to go with Shane Duffy. Obviously, a lot more goals, important goals, and you know, the most blocks in the season. I think Lewis Dunk speaks for himself. Really.
I think as a centre half pairing, Duff and Dunk.
Okay, but we're going to discuss the midfielders now, and we've had a heck of a lot of midfielders go through the doors over the last 10 years here. Do you have a hazard a guess to who played in the very first game of the decade in midfield?
Bridcut.
No,
was it? That was post.
That's a little bit later than that.
Fraser.
No, I tell you, it was Dean Cox, Gary Dicker, and Andrew Crofts. And also in that season, Alan Navarro. Gary Hart is on the list. Would you call him a striker or a midfielder? I mean, we're including, for the sake of this argument, we're including wingers in this when we're trying to decide.
I think by 2010, he had sort of reverted that role of right wing back stroke right sided midfield player,
yeah.
Rather than being a striker. So I think at that point in time, it's a valid. Comment.
Yeah, you can keep him in mind.
Okay, and also,
but
my first candidate, really, I mean, Gary was he was probably a little bit earlier in the before the turn of the into the tens, really. So I don't really feel right including him. But my first candidate would be Elliot Bennett.
Not for me. I think Elliot was very good, but if you're looking at a player who had played right side midfield stroke right wing. Anthony Knockhart in the promotion season was peerless for me.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I mean, I liked Elliot Bennett, and he had a great little free kick on him as well at the time, which was invaluable. He was a nice player, but I wouldn't say that he'd make.
And he also scored one of the nominees for the goals from midfield of the decade as well, which was the crowning goal at Walsall.
I was there.
Oh, yeah.
It was great afternoon out.
Yeah. But we've also got Sebastian Carroll on here, Lee Hendry, Jake Forsakaski, and Kazinga Lualuar. Is Kaz worthy of a place in your team?
On his 20 minutes rather than on his day, I think I'd love him. I'd love him coming off the bench. But not as a starting player.
Yeah, I mean, what we're considering here is not necessarily the best players, but the ones that have been most important for us over the last 10 years. And I would say, Kaz. I mean, he's been particularly the last couple of years at with Dean and the first few years at the Amex. He was box office. He was the only player we had really that would get you off your seat at that time.
Yeah, that's true. But as Kieran says, he's too inconsistent. Not enough. Output really.
Okay. The next year, we brought in a few more players. We have Matt Sparrow, Radoslav Kishishev, Jamie Smith. Who could forget Christian Baz and Bata Piedi as well? And then Liam Bridcutt did come in. Now, let's discuss Liam's capability. Is he worthy of a place in your team?
I think he probably is, yeah. Like Bridcutt. Player of the season twice. He was absolutely consistent. He was, he was the solid part of that team, wasn't he? He was reliable. He put in a shift. I mean, it was a shame it sort of ended a bit badly for him, but I really liked him as a player. I thought he was a great player. And a word here for Kishishev as well, who I also really liked. Yeah. I liked him as a player.
But Kieran, in regards to Liam Bridcutt, is he one of those players where it only ever really works for him at one club?
Not really. I think he found the step up at Sunderland a challenge. He's now, I think, is he now captain at Bolton?
Probably.
Yeah. And my understanding from my mates that support Bolton is that they've surprised that a player of his calibre is playing for them. He's had a decent career in the Championship. He did a job. They liked him at Leeds. They liked him at Forest. He tended to start well and then perhaps fall out of favour. In terms of the way that we transformed our style of football under Gus, he was really integral to that. And if you wanted somebody to score in a 4-3 victory, he was always your man.
Yeah, and that was another nominee for Goal of the Decade, which is his winner against Carlisle with Dean. I just love those goals where it hits the net and what rain just explodes off it. It's just
he was good, and he was integral to that team, wasn't he? Which was some of the best football we've seen here.
Under Oscar Garcia as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I think he'd definitely make the team.
Okay. So Liam Bridcutt is a possible for the team. And so this next season after that, we've got to have Vicente in there, haven't we?
Well, you've got on the grounds that he's one of the best players we've ever had here. Yeah, but I mean, he didn't.
But on this list, I've got Vicente next to Ryan Harley. I mean, it's
Ryan Harley.
Scored one of the best goals. At the Amex.
Yeah.
Also, free kick against Peterborough.
Yeah. Also took one of the worst penalties I've ever seen. And I include Millwall. Junior school football in that.
But I forgot to mention Craig Noon as well, as a winger.
Yeah, he was an entertaining little bundle, wasn't he?
And I've got Abdul Razak on this list as well. Him of the one game wonder. I mean, he had played a couple of games, but he had that one game against Ipswich where he was just outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, my God, we got one here, and then he just didn't ever turn up again.
No, it's odd that, isn't it? When I was thinking back before this thing, and I obviously got the time frame wrong, but I was thinking of Tommy Fraser, as I remember Tommy Fraser playing a game against Leeds at Withdean, where he absolutely bossed it, like he was a player from a different planet. Never did it again. It's weird, isn't it? How that happens.
It is weird, yeah. And he was, but that was 2008, 2009. Yeah. So that's not this decade. Okay, we also have Guy Sulin, Anton Rogers, Romain Vincelot.
A player I liked. I thought he was a good player, Vincelot, and I thought that we were kind of. I was surprised when we got rid of him. And he dropped down, didn't he? Did he go to Orient somewhere?
I think Orient and Southend.
Orient and Southend. Yeah, I thought he'd do better than that. And I particularly liked him. Do you remember that game he got sent off just for punching someone on the sideline for no reason whatsoever?
That was the game against Burnley where Ashley Barnes got sent off as well.
Yeah.
It was one of those games where the Amex really came of age, where it seems to be a feature, particularly with Brighton games. It probably happens with other teams as well, but it takes a really, really bad referee for the crowd to get going, and we had a really, really bad referee in that game.
We did, but Vincelot just punched for no apparent reason one of their players on side when the ball wasn't even anywhere near them. You know, you've got to admire a midfield player who does that.
I think they're having an argument over who is the hardest Teletubby, and Vincelot took exception.
But I mean, there's some other ones who are definitely. I would definitely have all of these in my team, but I can't pick them, unfortunately. But I've got Andrea Orlandi. Oh, yeah.
The prettiest midfield player of the decade.
He's a lovely fellow. We made him miss a flight nearly once. It was just to do an interview with us. It was wonderful. David Lopez. And we've also got Dean Hammond and Solly March on that season as well.
making their first starts for us. So, I mean, David Lopez, I mean, just for that goal against Palace, yeah. I mean, that was just wonderful, wasn't it?
Oh, I mean, that particular afternoon was probably my most enjoyable full 90 minutes of the decade in terms of a victory which meant something which I've been waiting for such a long time.
But it was, and then we've had a few against Palace though.
We have, but that was particularly nice, and that free kick, that Spanish Day's free kick, was a joy, wasn't it? Orlandi definitely was a lovely player. Yeah, it was a shame he was injured so often, but he was a lovely player and such a nice man as well.
And he certainly scores a lot of my favourite goals as well. I mean, there was a goal against Blackpool when we won 6-1, which we and scored all the goals actually because Dean Hammond got the own goal, didn't he? But it was he was just a wonderful, wonderful player. Scored some great goals, some important goals. But yeah, like you said, often injured. But okay, so next we brought in a bloke called Kemi. Is he worthy of a place in your team,
Matthew? Kemi, well, I didn't think we paused long enough to savage Ryan Harley, but now we've got to Kemi, we can perhaps take a few moments out. Kemi, my favourite Kemi moment was going to Lewis to watch the pre-season friendly. And within 10 minutes of not actually doing anything, Kemi was so sweaty and so on, that even his socks were dragging down around his ankles with the amount of sweat pouring off him. And he literally hadn't moved. He literally hadn't moved for the first 10 minutes of the game. He was a spectacularly bad footballer.
Okay. I think I sponsored his kit one season and he gave it to me at the Sponsors Award. And I think it's the one he'd been using for the whole of the season, and it looked remarkably untouched.
Okay. Well, we are going to have to, like, whiz through this. We are running out of time. So, Dal Stevens, Keith Andrews, Craig Conway, Jesse Lingard. Two of those have gone on to be very successful. Rowan Ince as well was on telescopic legs.
He had telescopic legs. Well, Dal Stevens, you'd have to have.
Definitely. Chewing.
I would have thought so.
Yeah. Why do you think he's so underrated?
Very quietly efficient, spectacular, unflappable, just gets on with it, doesn't it?
But I mean, we were speaking about his ball for Morpay's goal on Saturday, and he did it again actually a little bit later on in the game where Morpay could have scored again, and the pass for Anthony Knockaert against Palace last year.
Yeah.
No, apparently he doesn't play it forwards.
Yeah, well, he clearly does, doesn't he? And in this team, much more actually. One of the things that I've really noticed, you were talking, Kieran, a bit earlier about threading a path. That we've started playing the ball up through the middle, 1, 2, 3 passes, directly piercing straight up the middle, which we've never ever done before, and they invariably start with Stevens. You know, I think Stevens has adapted every season to what's been asked of him. Without a question for me, he'd be straight in there.
Okay, and Zuzi Toko. Yeah, well, he was on the bench quite a lot, but never actually played. Jao Teixeira, Danny Holler, Paddy McCourt, Gary Gardner, Berham Kayel, he's got to be worth a shout, surely.
If he'd stayed fit, I mean, I think when he was on his game, he was magnificent. He was an incredibly industrious player who could go from box to box. Never really had a finishing shot or on him, but a player who you really liked, and you want. If one of those players I always wanted to be coming back from injury or recovery, and it's never quite worked out. He got a long enough series of matches, but at least he did make it to the Premier League.
Yeah, and another player here that I really, really liked was Jamie Murphy.
Yeah, I like Jamie Murphy as well. You could argue perhaps he was a little bit lightweight, but he was a good player. I mean, and Paddy McCourt. I enjoyed Paddy McCourt while he was here. Mm. You know, he had skin by the bucket load, didn't he?
Are we all going to agree that Anthony Knockaert is a shoe-in on this, or
he is for me season?
I think for me, yeah, he probably has to be. I mean, he's a frustrating player in many ways, but when he was good, he was very, very good, and he was always exciting to watch.
And also a very emotional player, and anybody that saw him when he was at his most emotional, and I've seen the good and the bad. I remember being at Goodison 2 seasons ago where he just completely lost it and decided to go and kick, was it Seamus Coleman, up in the air to get a deserved red card at the time.
And again against Bournemouth last season.
Yep.
he had the red mist. And actually, that park footballer element of him is something which I find quite endearing. But he's a really nice guy as well.
Okay. But the next two on my list here, they are also nominees. We asked for nominees on Twitter. We're going to keep it going for a while as well. But they're also nominees for Goal of the Decade as well. One of which was Steve Sidwell, which relates to Andy Knockhart, that goal at Bristol City.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I like the goal. I like all Brighton goals, but it just... leaves me wanting more, and I don't know what more it is I want.
Well, if you want more than inch perfect, you're not going to find it. I mean, to do that from 50 yards was incredible feat of judgment.
And Yuri Skalak and his goal against QPR.
Yeah, that was that was goal of the season, wasn't it? That season
it was.
Yeah,
I particularly, if you want to watch that one again, I particularly recommend you watching it with the Alan Partridge commentary, because that's just genius. Ollie Norwood was a player that should have been a decent player for us. If you look at what he's done,
well, Ollie Norwood is playing fantastically at the moment, isn't he? I mean, he seemed so lightweight when he played for us, didn't he? But he seems to find so much space now and just running their midfield. So clearly a bit missed out there, okay. Noddy.
And then we get on to Davy Prupper and Pascal Gross.
I think Pascal Gross, if I can squeeze him in, I would like to, because his ability to score goals, his one trick that he has, that he still manages to get away with in the Premier League, even though they will have been analysing him for 2.5 years. The gross turn, but it works every time. He's scored some fantastic goals, and of course he scored our first Premier League goal as well, so we should always remember that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the fact that he does the gross turn in slow motion to even give him a chance.
It's brilliant. It's like the TV. It saves the TV company so much work. It's brilliant. Then we've got Izzy Brown, Jamie Lumby, Jose Escuerdo. Probably the best team goal of the decade for me. The goal against Stoke.
Yeah.
Yves Bissouma, Jahan Bash, Will Collar, Gokores, Trossard, Moy, Alzati, Taylor Richards, Baluta. Where are we at on this? So we're going Stevens.
Definitely
middle
Stevens.
Two, Stevens and...
Bridcut.
Stevens and Bridcut, agreed. Okay, wingers.
Knockout and Vicente.
Knockout and Vicente, yeah.
Look at that. That's decent, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good looking.
That is decent. And next week we're going to do the strikers. So I'm going to have our full team. It's like, I think we know who one of the strikers is going to be, I think. Because he actually started. He was there on the first game of the season. So it was like of the decade. So, we'll talk about that next week. Now, Kieran, we've done so really well so far not to talk about football finance, but we're going to a little bit because we haven't got much time left,
Jesus.
Which is good.
Why have you given me the microphone?
Why have I given you the microphone? Because what I would like to do... Now, there's this little thing. You've started a podcast. Now, what made you think people would be interested in a podcast about football finance?
Absolutely nothing. It is actually somebody from Radio 5 Live contacted me, who is setting up a podcast production company. And as you know, I've been occasionally on the radio and the TV. he'd interviewed me on a few occasions and thought it would be a different type of show from the regular football show, where people are sort of focusing on an individual team. So,
yeah.
We've done it, and what we're trying to do is myself and Kevin Day, who's, of course, a Crystal Palace fan, but Kevin's a really smart bloke as well. We're trying to go under the seedy underbelly of football money, so we've been looking at Bury and Bolton and Mike Ashley and the Glazers and all of the other ne'er-do-wells, scumbags and... Yeah.
It's a gift that keeps on giving for you, actually, with this, isn't it? I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I've listened to the shows, I mean, and Kevin does Incredulous so well.
That's right. I think his eyebrows have gone into orbit on a few occasions. And in a way, it's a real tragedy that the show, A, started, and B, I thought we had enough material for three shows and then we'd die. But football keeps on giving. And if you look what's happening next week, Macclesfield Town are up in the High Court for to be wound up by Sol Campbell for unpaid £240,000 when he was the manager. Bury are finally going to be wound up, or they're not going to be wound up. This week, Birmingham City were in the High Court, Oldham Athletic were in the High Court, and we've got the craziness of clubs in the Championship who are selling the family silver to try to get promoted to the Premier League.
Yeah, that was the stadium edition this week, wasn't it? Which was amazing, actually. So, particularly some of the stuff you were coming up with about Liverpool, which is one of your favourite subjects, actually. I mean, you've given us some solid gold about them in the past, but I mean, has its appeal surprised you?
Yes. Or, well, yeah, yes and no. I think there is a view that football, as football fans, that we should be patronised, exploited, and provide a backdrop for Sky TV broadcasts to sell around the world for the Premier League. But actually, if you engage with football fans, you find that they want to know all about their club. A lot of them are aware that some of the people that own the clubs are behaving in inappropriate manners. That they are taking a very short term view of the survival and the existence of the club, and they want to protect it because a football club is not the same as a manufacturer of razors. It's not the same as a travel agent. It's part of the community. It's part of your history and heritage. It's a father and son and grandson and granddaughter and mother and sister and brother part of the city, the town, the community. And we need people to look at the club owners to make sure that they are not playing the gamble.
But go on, sorry, Matthew.
Is it just looking at the club owners, though? Or is it, because it's a broken economic model, isn't it? So it's always going to attract a certain type of person. You know, your sensible businessman is not going to touch a lot of it.
There are sensible businessmen. If you take a look at some of the lower league clubs, you've got the likes of Andy Holt at Accrington and Mark at Tranmere. Today, I was looking at the accounts of one of the clubs in the Championship, and it was a classic case of this club managed to break even. It's Rotherham United, but they got relegated. So football is broken in the sense that if you want to make money, you're not going to have success.
I mean, I've actually got this question written down here. I mean, is it possible for a club to break even and actually be successful?
It depends how you define success. In terms of winning trophies, it is possible if you are a huge club. Therefore, we're talking about the likes of, you know, for massive clubs, Liverpool, Manchester United and Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, but I mean, we're in the Premier League. We seem to be doing okay, and we've just announced a loss of 21 million.
Yes, that's a function of second season syndrome. The money didn't go up. We had less money from the Premier League because it's £2 million per position. But if you think about what happened in the second season, Shane Duffy, Pascal Gross, Lewis Dunk, they all got new contracts. That's a lot of money. We signed Ali Yohanbach. We signed Florin Andoni. We signed Yves Bissouma. And when you've got players coming into the Premier League, they've got expectations of high wages. And Brighton Hove Albion, you know, a club who in their first season in the first division had a wage bill of £800,000. Last season had a wage bill of £111 million.
It's absolutely staggering. Unfortunately, that is actually all we've got time for to talk about on that. But, I mean, obviously you can go on to the Price of Football podcast where Kieran and Kevin talk about this a lot. And it is fascinating. And there is some nice little barbs between a Brighton fan and a Palace fan, which is what you'd expect. Has Kevin said anything to you about Monday night?
Yeah, he's going to meet me afterwards down a dark alley and give me a good shoeing.
Excellent. On that note, that's all we've got time for. So thank you very much for listening to this week's show. Thank you to Matt Potter. Thank you to Kieran Maguire. I've been AD Packham. We've been brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Congratulations to the winner of the competition. And we will be back with you next week. Thanks for listening. See you then. Bye.
I fall off my chair and I'm wondering how I get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. And I'm wondering what it is. my face, losing control, yeah.